let people in on our little date that we had on Friday.
We had
a movie date, Sam and I did. We went to go see Kinnick, the documentary, in theaters.
We went to the Palms.
That was also my first time to the Palms.
Great, great experience, right?
I had a great experience. I had no idea you could, like, eat.
Yeah, like, order. Yeah, you could order a full meal at the Palms.
Chicken strips on the menu.
I'm surprised you didn't order them.
I should have. I was a little rough that day.
We had a nice day. We went, sat and saw the documentary, and I think saw it in the best presentable manner.
Yeah,
that's, I think, Scott and the filmmakers intended.
Yeah, it was really cool to see it, like, on the big screen and with the sound and everything. Because it's one thing to watch it like that, and then it's another thing to watch
it on
my
laptop. Well, what I love about the movies, too, is, like, it kind of forces you to, like,
pay attention.
Yeah, exactly. Like, had we just got it on Vimeo and watched it at home, it would have been so easy for us to, like, get distracted. Like, an hour and a half movie would have lasted 3 hours like it does on TV.
Yeah. He would have got more money from it, but we had a great...
Who's to say we're not going to buy it on Vimeo anyway?
True.
So the person we had on, Scott Sipker.
Yep. How do you know him?
So I met Scott when I was working at WHO 13, and I met him because he was like a guy they would bring in on Sound Off as a host sometimes, and then... RVTV, he would do like these video essays on the towns that we were in. Mm-hmm. And it was a cool way, like, it was my first foray into like different creative storytelling for news, because the majority of his stuff was just like pictures and like stand-ups. Mm-hmm. So him just in front of the camera telling the story, and I had to figure out what's the most like best way to tell his story that he was trying to get across about all the different towns that we were in. Mm-hmm. And it was cool to like be there for that. And then to see him come out with this documentary, come out with the story. He's been talking about doing this story for forever.
Yeah.
And he said that like, yeah, we're working on it. We're working on it. All those years when I was working there, they're working on it. And then this last year after COVID hit and that's all they could work on.
Right.
They just dove headfirst into it.
It was so cool. Has he always talked so eloquently like that? Has that
yes.
always, because he was a theater guy, right?
Yeah, so he's been in multiple plays, big theater guy, big just appreciator of the arts.
Yeah.
Not just an appreciator of the arts, appreciator of the arts in Iowa.
Yeah.
As somebody he's trying to prove to the world, and I think successfully going at it too, that Iowa has stories to tell. Mm-hmm. Which is awesome.
Yeah, no, even back to his Iowa Nice days, like telling those stories and now sharing Niall Kinnick's incredible story that not many people know about. As a Hawkeye, I didn't know the ins and outs of it as well as I do now. And he was just, he has one of those, like I said, he's just so eloquent in the way he talks. You just like captivated. And he's also the narrator of the film. So it just even, it makes that even more captivating as well. And you're going to like today's episode.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah, again, if you've seen the documentary, I think this is, I'm always one of those people, I love hearing behind the scenes of how stuff was made and the filmmaker's mindset.
Or the
and
deleted scenes.
Exactly. The bloopers.
Yeah, that too.
But if you've seen it, this gives way more context to what the filmmakers were thinking. But if you haven't seen it, I think this will convince you to go see Kinnick, the documentary.
What was your favorite part of the documentary?
I think the way that Scott and his crew ideally, like, they laid out his notebooks from when he joined the service, mm-hmm. To when he died. And you don't see, like, a degradation of Niall Kinnick. That's not what it is. But Scott clearly lays it out as, like, you know, the eloquence isn't lost, but it feels more like a stream of consciousness when you get to his last two notebooks.
Yeah.
That he's just kind of, like, thinking out loud and seeing what that time in history did to somebody even like Niall Kinnick is, I think, really interesting.
No, it was.
What was your favorite part?
Oh, gosh.
Which two parts made you cry?
The last line made me cry. I can't remember. It was right before the last part. I teared up a little bit. Something someone said struck me. But I teared up a little bit. not gonna lie.
She is emotional.
But it was really good. I don't know what my favorite part, the girlfriend parts, like I mentioned. Yeah. In this episode, they just made me laugh.
Like, well, because that makes
he's
him,
so innocent.
But that makes him relatable too, because how many of us like grew up wondering like, oh, how do you talk to girls?
Yeah.
Or how do you talk to people that you like?
And I think you forget about like how young he was when he like, the way you hear him and you're like, this is a 40-year-old man speaking. It's like, no, this guy's like 19 years old. Like, oh my God. It's just, it's mind boggling to me. The man he was at the time he died and the man he could have been. It's just, that will never be lost on me because of this documentary.
Go see Kinnick, the documentary.
And enjoy today's episode.
Wait, who are you jealous of?
I told you, the people that got donuts outside the Queens.
I didn't know we were
from David Beckham.
That was before the recording.
Who are you jealous of?
Who am I jealous of? That's tough right now. Everybody who gets to stay home and just watch movies all the time. No.
Are you a big movie guy?
I do love, me and my sister, we weren't as close growing up. And then as my sister and I got older, we loved talking about movies. Actually, know who I am jealous of. Upon this recording, last night, first night of Dancing with the Stars, all the people that got to see my boy, Wayne Brady, destroy that dance floor.
Did you watch the whole show?
Yes. And live on Disney Plus, by the way.
Is it really live?
Yeah, it wasn't on ABC at all.
Wait, it's live.
Live on it. Dang. But then you can DVR and just pause it anytime. Yeah, it's great.
Because who else is on this season? I saw Jessie James Decker.
Yes, Jessie. I had no clue who she was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, not a country guy. Not a country guy.
Her husband plays in the NFL, or played.
That I didn't know until then. Selma Blair, mm-hmm. who is in like Legally Blonde, a bunch of like teen heartthrob movies.
Yeah.
Who are the other big ones? Sam Champion, ABC, Good Morning America. Meteorologist. There we go. Couldn't think of the word.
Who do you think's going to win?
Wayne freaking Brady.
Let's go, baby. Oh,
Vinny from
Jersey Shore.
Dude, my wife Desiree, she was so on board. And then he started dancing and she was like, no.
It was bad?
It was so bad.
Oh, shit, Vinny. Come on, man. No fist bump?
All he's got is the fist bump.
Cavs are here.
That's Cavs here. No, that's Jersey Shore.
Yeah, but
that was Pauly D.
Yeah, Pauly D, not Vinny Never.
Yeah, both of them were doing it.
Oh, okay. Cabs are here.
Cabs are here.
Well, episode is here. Enjoy, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the North, general of the Felix Legions, loyal, servant to the true emperor, Marcus Aurelius. These microphones are just so much fun.
The fact you can hear yourself. Yeah, really.
Does it make it better that you can hear yourself?
Father to a murdered wife, and I will have my vengeance. You know, I haven't seen it in probably like 20 years, but that, I love. I listened back at Iowa State. We had this thing called a network where everybody would just load up all of their content onto it, and then you could.
Oh, it's like an early version, early version of like torrent sites.
Yeah, That's awesome. You just all this music in 2001. Would be up on the network, and you just pull it down. And so I got all these soundtracks to movies because, of course, I love movies. And one of the soundtracks I got was the Gladiator soundtrack, but it also had a version with the quotes from the movies in the soundscape. And so I listened to that so much, like, while I was studying, I just learned all the lines.
All right, what is your all-time favorite movie soundtrack? Just docile tones. Just
gosh, I have to go with A Beautiful Mind. Ooh. I love it. Now I'm talking about not songs that have pop lyrics to it. You know, there is
like actual score.
Yeah, there's classical. There are classical singing. I think Charlotte Church is the woman who sings more aria. You know, classical opera style on some of the songs. But that A Beautiful Mind soundtrack. I think that's James Horner. Is boy, that'll put you right into a nice place.
What place is that?
The place where you can be the greatest code breaker in the history of America.
I'm a fan of any John Williams soundtrack.
John Williams is a legend. He's a genius.
The Pirates. No, John Williams didn't do Pirates of the Caribbean, did he?
I think he might. No, I don't think that's him.
Because that is an iconic melody.
John Williams does a great job in so many. I really like him. I'm much more of a James Horner, Thomas Newman type, like Road to Perdition. Whew, make it, get the tissues out.
Klaus Badelt. Klaus Badelt. Badelt? No, how would you pronounce it?
That's definitely, I don't know that.
I know Klaus.
You think that's German? Berlilt. Scott Ziepka?
Scott. That old timey. And Scott Ziepka.
Yeah.
Got
it. Yeah, see?
Seth MacFarlane talked about that one time about how, like, when mics didn't have, like, the low end, so that's why in, like, the 1920s and 30s, everybody's voice sounds really high.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Like, they didn't have the low end, so that's why everybody sounds like, and in today's news, we're talking about the war. Speaking of the war, and who was in the war? Niall Kinnock.
Have we started to record?
We've been going for 6 minutes, man.
Oh, boy.
Let's back up before we get into Niall
into the Jealous Podcast.
Welcome back to the Jealous Podcast. If you've heard us been talking for a while, I'm here with Sam today, and Sam brought on someone he's jealous of, who is Scott. So, Sam, tell us why you are jealous of Scott.
This is going to feel uncomfortable.
Scott's not used to hearing that people are jealous of him.
It's true. It's because I usually run out of the room if it's even remotely a chance of happening.
No, I met Scott on... Surprisingly, I didn't know about your Iowa Nice Guy stuff before I had met you. So the first time I met you was, I think, RVTV.
I think that's right.
It was either RVTV or a Sound Off.
You know, I do think it was maybe a Sound Off skit that we tried.
And wanted to bring you on because you have a documentary out, Kinnock the Documentary, and Shelby and I were able to go see it last week from this recording, and we were just blown away. And I had been talking to you about it before of what you were doing about it. And I think the biggest part of jealousy that I have for you right now is you had the opportunity to premiere it in a big ass theater with a bunch of your friends, with a bunch of people. And like, it was a successful premiere. And the feeling you must have, I'm trying to imagine that feeling because I can't even fathom it right now.
Well, I wish that I wasn't so nervous that night. The first time it plays in a theater, I was like, oh, what could go wrong? Okay. That's what I'm thinking. I'm sitting
there. The state of the art theater and the projector stops working.
Exactly. And so then, or is there in the file we gave them, is there some blip that, you know, and we watched it.
You gave them version 12 instead of version 13.
Exactly. Yeah. And you don't know. Oh no. And so I knew that this was the narrative going on in my head while I'm watching the film. And so I tried to check it back and be like, Scott, enjoy this moment. Mm-hmm. And it was a wonderful evening. I had my mom sitting there next to me. And she was so into the movie that during the 1939 Ironman season, as we're recapping each game, and we're going almost play by play in some moments, she's sitting next to me like a little mouse gestures. Like, oh, come on. Yes.
Like, was there ever a moment where, like, your mom just grabbed you and was like,
She didn't, because she was trying to maintain, like, that. I don't think she really knew for sure that she was, like, pumping her fist in a really small area and clapping her hands quietly because she was so enthralled. And I just thought it was so cute and adorable, and realizing that if my mom's having this experience, hopefully others are as well. Mm-hmm. And if we were able to, even though maybe I wasn't in the moment as much as I would want to be, the fact that we have gotten compliments like, man, that felt like it was 15 minutes long, mm-hmm. tells us that we told a story that took people along for a ride they were enjoying, a ride they didn't even know they were on for most of it because they were just in the moment. And I think as an artist, as a human being, actually residing in the moment, being nowhere but the moment is, well, I guess they might call it nirvana. And if you as an artist are able to create something that gives people that sense of nirvana, that's what I guess you're striving for. I'm not trying to say we made the perfect film, but I know we did.
No,
but there's something special there, and mm-hmm. And I just feel so lucky to have the opportunity to tell this story that for some reason nobody's told in a feature length documentary like this before.
So for people who don't know you, then talk about who you are, what you do, and what led you to Kinnick the documentary, which everybody should go see Kinnick the documentary. It's incredible.
Thank you. I'll keep this as short as I can. I had a viral video 10 years ago called Iowa Nice that got a million views on YouTube back when getting a million views on YouTube was news.
It's at 1.5 now. I just looked.
Okay, well, there you go. But the first 3 days were much more successful than the next 9 years and 11 months. But we had that success and we got all this attention. There was a time people were like, what are you going to do next? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Are you talking about your Iowa filmmakers?
Yeah. Okay. So Paul Benedict wrote the original Iowa Nice and directed it. And then we were at the time with Brendan Dunphy, who the three of us had put forth an idea for a web series called Valentine Road, which is still our dream project. It's about hitmen in Iowa when Templeton Rye was being escorted across the state to Chicago. And it's still our dream project, and it's a wonderful drama. It's an action drama, and it's really good. It's really expensive to pull off a 1930s period piece. So we came up with the idea to do these two-minute videos, and luckily Paul had this great idea, and Brendan was there. He didn't work on Iowa Nice specifically, but the three of us were there. We were coming up with some concepts for follow-ups, and eventually we came up with Hawkeye Nice and Cyclone Nice. But the genesis, even before that, of that idea was doing a documentary on Niall Kinnick and Jack Trice together. So that's what we wanted to do. But at the time, we didn't have the infrastructure in place to actually do a feature-length film. So we went with these two-minute videos. Hawkeye Nice and Cyclone Nice got picked up by ESPN. ESPN asked us to do some college football comedy content for them for 2 seasons. We did that. That's when I got onto a radio show called Murph and Andy, which was my favorite radio show. And I still have weaseled my way onto that every week.
Just riding
out until they tell me not to. And it took a couple years, a lot of false starts on the documentary, but finally we had everything in place to begin going after a Jack Trice, Niall Kinnick documentary. And one of the big pieces that we added was Christopher Cook, who is one of the co-directors of Kinnick, the documentary. He brought some really indispensable talents to the film and to the film group, if you want to call it that. And so we started principal photography about 6 years ago, maybe even longer than that. And we never were successful in getting funding. And by we, I mean me. That was my job to get funding, and I failed. And so because we didn't have the funding we needed, we had a lot of starts and stops. We'd go months and months at a time without working on the documentary, which is why it took so long to get done. We will remedy that moving forward for other projects.
What was the final time from when you start, like the first start to release?
We shot our first pre-interview, which in 2013 with Mike Chapman, which you see at
college.
I had more hair. So, but Mike Chapman, that interview actually made it into the end of the film. If you'll see at the very end of the film when Mike Chapman is talking about most of us have feet of clay. I have feet of clay, but there are some of us who rise above. And I think now Kinnick is one of them. That is actually from 2013, way back when we did that pre-interview with Mike. So that was we filmed that though to help to put together a little reel to try and get funds. Of course, that didn't work, but it ended up being in the film. So that was our first shoot. So if you want to go from 2013 till now, it was 9 years.
Wow. So you talked about the idea. What sparked the idea of Niall Kinnick? Did you just stumble upon one of his letters in a open library or something? And that was there's more here, and you just kept pulling on the thread? Or
it was much more, unfortunately, it was much more practical
but,
than that.
Because I looked as we were watching it and how you laid out his letters and his notebooks from when he was just in life. There's so much. It's almost Shakespearean in how he wrote. I feel there's so much depth to how he wrote. And having known you and talked to you, I was like, Scott had to have just read one letter and like just kept pulling and pulling on the thread.
Yeah, I was not aware of his eloquence with the pen or the typewriter at the time when we decided to go after the film. Really, it was a practical approach. I wanted to do feature-length films. The rest of the guys wanted to do feature-length films. And having had the experience with Valentine Road, where if you're going to do a dramatized fiction in a time period specifically, you're going to have to raise millions and millions of dollars. So it was like, well, everybody trusts us to do two-minute videos, but they don't trust us to do 90-minute films, so we need to make that transition. What can we do? And so just looking at the marketplace, I grew up in a real tiny town here in Iowa. I grew up a Hawkeye fan. My parents, as you know, you call them Tavern Hawks. They didn't go to Iowa. They were just Hawkeye fans, as almost everybody in Iowa was, because of Hayden Fry. And so I knew about Niall Kinnick. I knew the bullet points. I didn't know anything in between the bullet points. But the bullet points then were enough to know, wow, this would be a good story. Also, we have a built-in market with Hawkeye fans and college football fans, because it's not really a Hawkeye story, but we know Hawkeye fans are going to be our primary audience. We have a built-in audience. If we want to make films in Iowa, we have to prove that we can make a profitable film. Yeah. That's just the crass nature of this all. I'd love to tell you, no, I was just, it's so whimsical. His story took over and connected with my heart. And to be honest, that's true. Like, you come to fall in love with Niall Kinnick when you get to know him in the way that we were fortunate enough to get to know him. But without that built-in audience, we probably don't pursue it, because I am in the business of wanting to tell great stories, hopefully great Iowa stories, but hopefully profitable great Iowa stories. And so Niall Kinnick's story and Jack Trice's story, I think, fit all those categories.
So where do you start researching a project like this? Like, where were all those letters at? Were they with the university? Did you have to work?
Yeah, so the family in 1959 made their first donation of papers and scrapbooks and stuff of Niall Kinnick to the university. So over at the University Archives, they have a really nicely organized Kinnick collection. Yeah. It's actually on the website. They've scanned it all. And so
all that's been digitized
It's all been digitized. Oh, we did go in because we wanted to have our film be in 4K. Mm-hmm. We did go and rescan some stuff with newer technology. But the University Archives, shout out to them. Amazing job. We couldn't have done it without them. Cool. And so we started sort of there. We also started with experts who had come before us and written the books, right? Yeah. So we started there. And then we were like, gosh, we got to find somebody who has living memories of Niall Kinnick. There's probably nobody. So we go down the roster of the Iron Men, and all of them had passed away. I was able to contact, like, Bill Green's widow. Mm-hmm. She's... at the time, she was, late 90s, mid-90s, late 90s. And she had remembered Niall and dancing with Niall. And she remembered when her and her husband found out that Niall died, that they were out walking, and Bill was one of the Ironmen. And he just sat down on the curb and had a really tough time losing Niall. But she didn't have enough, like, where we could, like, build a documentary around her. So then we went through the family. We're like, we're not going to find anybody. And then little do we know, there's Don Byers.
And that's incredible, too, because I think one of the notes I had made when watching the movie is Don Byers, I feel, is, like, the thing that really anchors that documentary down. Like, he is such a character. And I believe when you said he's 90?
He's 95 now.
95. So he's active. 95. He was so... Like, he's so there for how old he is.
And instantly likable. Like, he doesn't even have to say anything. It's the first frames of him on screen, and people are just smiling.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, my gosh. Without Don Byers giving us that firsthand account of catching balls from Niall, whether it's a pass or a punt, or watching him eat these prodigious breakfasts, mm-hmm. or being over in Omaha and touching the Heisman Trophy. Like, all that stuff added to our documentary so much that it just took it up to a whole nother level. I think we have a good documentary without Don Byers. We have a much better documentary with Don Byers. Don is the heart and soul of this film, and we're just so lucky that he decided to take such good care of himself over the years, and his wife, Anne, who's now 92. They are wonderful, wonderful people, and Don just was able to really get us as close to, like, because really, listen to this. Don Byers is the only person left on Earth who who has memories that intimate of Niall Kinnick.
So when talking about that, then did you ever feel like you were on a major timetable with this at that point? Mm-hmm. So when you talk, because that's something I feel like a lot of filmmakers who talk about World War II, and even now we're getting to that point, I think, with a little bit with Vietnam, like that generation is unfortunately leaving us. Mm-hmm. And you, there's only so much time to tell those stories. So did you ever feel like at some point, like the clock is ticking on this?
Of course, mm-hmm. all the time. This project took way longer than it should have. I shouldn't even say that. I think it's actually come out at the right time. It's come out in a way that is people are being able to receive it, and I don't want to second guess anything. You know, it wasn't out of laziness that it took so long to come out. It was just a practicality that because we weren't getting paid ourselves to make the film, you guys are in this business, whenever a client comes to you and is willing to pay you to do some video content for them, that has to go first. And so we did, and I'm fortunate enough to have wonderful clients who have given me so many works and so many things to work on and to give me this wonderful life that I've had. But certainly wanted to get this film done so Don and Ann could see it. It wasn't that we felt like we were going to lose anything from the film because we got what we needed. When we got Don here, we got him to Adele and had him give us the tour. We did our main interview. We had that, and then we flew to Arizona and filmed there. So within a matter of a couple weeks, we had everything that we needed from Don, even if he were to leave us. So it wasn't from that point of view. It was more from, man, I really want Don to see this.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be happy with it.
Yeah.
And we are very fortunate. Don and Ann, they live up near Seattle. Still alive, and they know about the film, and we have sent it to them. They're older, and they don't really care to turn on their cell phone, so they might be the hardest people to reach in America, but that's by choice, and they're just wonderful people, and I hope when people see the film that they agree that Don Bice is just, and are just exquisitely charming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's the way they speak, too. Like, they have the... They don't just talk about Niall Kinnick as, you know, we saw Niall, like you hear him say Uncle Niall or cousin or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's just so intimate in how they spoke about him that, again, it just brought more of that grounded feeling mm-hmm. to the whole documentary.
And we're having Don walk us through what it was like to be a kid in the Great Depression.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times people lose that sense of time that Niall was growing up in. And Don's able to put us right back there.
Yeah, that's something I wrote down, is the history that you incorporated throughout the whole piece. It put you into that era of what was going on with these people during that time. I thought that was amazing. And Don made me cry. He really did.
It was. We got to like the end of the movie, and I looked over because hey, Don is crying at the end of the movie, and then I look over, and then Shelby's crying. Like, I was like, credits were rolling. I was like, you good?
Oh god! But I did have a question on that, because so he said that final line, which we don't have to get into because I'll tear up. But then you said, "Hey, can I ask you one more question?" And then we never heard what that question was. What was that question that you asked him?
Yes, it was. It was pretty much the question I was going to ask is if in 2022, if the Buffalo Bills would be the best team in the NFL.
Stop.
And but he didn't want to answer that. So
yeah, because he's like, I tell you no.
He's like, that's 5 years later. You think the Bills are going to be good? What's funny is that I don't remember. People ask me that.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what I have the an emotional memory of that moment, which I knew that. Guys probably interview some people on camera sometime and you're trying to get them to a place mm-hmm. and I'd finally gotten Don to with my you know I didn't do it he was there and he was so present and giving and emotional at that moment that I didn't want to lose that, and so I was probably going to ask him some other super emotional question. That's probably what I was going towards, to see if I could extrapolate a little bit more from him, but Don and his wisdom knew I just gave it to you. All you need. You don't need any more than that. And also gave us the opportunity to end the film on a lighter note. Because it is a fairly heavy moment. And Don's just personality. I mean, you couldn't script that, right? You couldn't script it.
He makes you think about all that Niall Kinnick could have been and the person he could have become and all that he could have continued to teach us. And he taught us so much at 24 when he passed away too. And I thought it was, I never put the two and two together that he died at 24. What did I write down? Shit.
He was a month away from his 25th birthday.
And his number was 24.
That's right.
That's the that was the weird.
And our premiere date was August 24th.
Oh, you see what you did there?
It's just threads all the way through. Right.
It works.
But so what were some of like the most surprising parts of reading, of going through his writings and his thoughts? I mean, you laid it out pretty well. Like, I just thought some iconic lines were like, "My dear Niall," just feels like such an icon. Like, put that on a shirt. Or, like, put that in front of his statue in front of Kinnick Stadium. And then also just how progressive he was in terms of social issues as well in his writings. Like, were those some of the things that surprised you the most? Or was it, like, kind of over time you really just saw the layers of the onion?
Yeah, Niall was just... He was such an impressive and surprising individual, to use your word surprising, that you came to expect him to have thought deeply about things and had a curiosity that led him down roads of inquiry that allowed him to maybe be ahead of his time. And so you don't want to, you know, like when you're walking through the Louvre, have you guys been to the Louvre in Paris?
I wish I could go to the Louvre.
I've been there twice, not to brag.
You say that so casually. You know when you're walking through the Louvre?
I've been to Europe,
all right? No, I don't.
I've been outside the Sagrada Familia.
Yeah, okay, well, fair enough. Well, one of the things, and it can be really any museum, but I find myself in the Louvre, like the first 15 minutes, I'm like, wow, that's an incredible piece of art. And then by the second hour, I'm walking by masterpieces and being like, whatever. And I don't, that's not exactly what happens with Niall, but you get to read his things that if I were to write them one time, people would be like, wow, that's really good. But he's so consistently intelligent and well thought out that you come to take it for granted in some ways. And so that surprising, that poeticism that he wrote with, certainly at the end when the moon beams and just those last couple letters that are journal entries that we had from him that really, I think, showed off his artistic side. They were just littered throughout. So, the more surprising things to me were like how nervous he got around girls.
That made me laugh. I kept laughing and looking at you like, this is funny.
I remember specifically at one point, like, you show the first picture of him, and then all of a sudden, Shelby's like, he was a cutie.
He was cute.
Yeah. I've had that reaction.
I wasn't expecting to hear that.
Yeah. Well, all the Iron Men, I mean, like, they all look older than, you know, being in their early 20s to me. You know, life was a little harder back then. And they had certainly a different sort of responsibility. And they played a really tough game of football with no masks on. Mm-hmm. So that had, you get to see a few broken noses. but yeah, they certainly, Niall was a handsome man, and he did well with the ladies, but he was quite shy. And so he didn't really get involved in dating until really more so after football. And he writes about, gosh, what was I, essentially I'm paraphrasing, like, what was I thinking all those years?
That's what I think in my head. It was like, why did I wait so long to be interested in women?
And there's one letter that we couldn't fit in, because mostly the film, we just laid out chronologically. And the part where we talk about the dating is in the war section. But there is a letter that he wrote to one of his friends that after he was on a date, he was worried about getting back to where he was staying at and being able to fit through the door frame because his horns were so big, which is the old expression where horny comes from.
Oh.
Right. And, but he does it in such like an innocent way. Right. Like he just can't get through the doorway because his horns are in the
way. Not necessarily just because of that. But the other thing I took away from his letters, I was like, nobody writes like that anymore. Nobody talks like that anymore. And going through those letters, do you ever wish we still wrote and talked like that a little bit?
Oh, yeah, especially reading not only his letters, but his father's writings, some of his friends, and then the sports columns of the day. I mean, they are writing with some hyperbole and artistic expressions that maybe are a little over the top, but they're so beautiful. And so I do, I, you know, you long for those days. That's nostalgia, I suppose. And certainly I know we don't write like that stuff anymore, but it's, it, it maybe is not the most efficient form of communication.
Yeah, it doesn't get the, it doesn't get the point across quickly.
No, but they're also taking time because they're, they have a pen and paper in front of them, and this might be the only correspondence that they have,
yeah,
with that person for the week or for the month. And so it is totally different. I mean, if Niall Kinnick were around today, I don't think he'd be writing that eloquently over text message. Okay.
Yeah.
But for his time, even then, I mean, writing letters was so ubiquitous. He was a special person, and writers have come to the film and seen it and been jealous of him as a writer. He's just an extraordinary person, and certainly his grandfather, who we have in the film, the former governor, rewriting the Excelsior poem in a few places, yeah, here and there. And he had a special family, and they really cared about being well-rounded people, and I think that shows.
How long were the letters, and also how long do you think it took them to write the letters?
Yeah, when you look at the actual penmanship of it, you don't see a lot of crossing out, yeah, words and things like that. So I think it just like anything with habit, it gets easier.
Yeah.
And so I think pretty much it's just that's how he wrote and his father wrote. And it's like, well, this is how we're bloop, bloop, bloop. And that's the English that they wrote. It's their, yeah, language. Each letter is a little different. Some are pages and pages long. Some are on one page, and some, you know, are actually typed out. So they had so many different ways to communicate their wonderful language, which I am still exceptionally jealous of.
So for you, what is your favorite part of the film? Like, what was the thing that stuck with you the most? Like, the minute you guys cut it together and you saw that edit, you were like, this is the moment.
The original,
for you.
Yeah. The original edit was over 2 hours, and we ended up cutting out 30 minutes to take it down to 90 minutes. And there are some stuff in that 30 minutes that we cut that I love.
Killed,
yeah,
a couple babies.
Yeah, it was tough, but it was the right thing to do for the film, I think, for Niall's story.
What was something that stood out to you in that?
One story, like, that Niall's not really a junior. He's now Clark Kent Jr. We released this as a little bonus online, but that his middle name wasn't spelled exactly. It had an E on it, and his father didn't have an E, and that was to honor his grandfather, Governor Clark, with an E, and so he's not really a junior, but that his nickname growing up was June, yeah, and I love the idea of Niall Kinnick running around Adele, probably scuffing up his knee and crying, and kids calling him June. I, yeah, love that idea. That's really good. I mean, there's some sad stuff that we had in there, and we just took out because we didn't get into Ben's story, Niall's first brother, Ben. He had two brothers, Ben and George, but Ben ended up passing away in the fight for the Pacific as well during World War II. And
so the Kinnicks were one of those families that lost multiple,
yeah,
family members in World, yeah, War II.
And then some other stuff, like he played in the college all-star game against the NFL champion at the time, and he performed really well. And we just got to the place where, especially as we get out of that 1939 season, we know we have the war section is so different than the rest of the film, because we, if you think back now, we don't have any experts for the most part. Mike Chapman's not in there. Todd Lidd's not really in there. We don't really have any visuals. So the film kind of changes in that last war section. And so we needed to get to that quickly. So some things we left out, like the college all-star game that he performed, and he had this beautiful, we did fit the photo in. He had this red, white, and blue uniform on, looked great. Mm-hmm. But there's so many little things that we took out. But for what's in the film, and my favorite stuff is that I really, like, every time I'm watching, I'm like, God, I love that moment. And I love that moment. I love that. If I start at the beginning, I love that we dropped this nugget of, oh, by the way, there's a school in Japan named for Niall Kinnick.
Yeah.
Yeah, that little nugget. I was like, wait, yeah, what?
Uh-huh. And you know, that the intro, because this is not a rah-rah Hawkeye film, it's not a rah-rah State of Iowa film, we wanted to have it so that if somebody is in Montana, they can enjoy the film. We need to lay out how big a deal Niall Kinnick is right away. And to have these little nuggets of information that even Iowans don't know really, was I just love that every time I see it, because we actually had a student at the school get us some footage for us. Yeah. So that's actually from that school. And we are very close to having a premiere over there, which I'll go over to Japan here. Yeah, we haven't locked in the date yet, but yeah, I'm going to go over there. And the administration is so excited because the kids, they don't really know who Niall is. And so it'll be cool to show them that. But, you know, starting there, that's one thing. But then just almost every time Don Bice is on camera, I love the enlistment section where we put right all this, that myth that Niall heard about Pearl Harbor and ran down and enlisted that day. Instead, we lay out, nobody's ever done this. This is firsthand research. Paul Benedict, one of our directors, really took the lead on this one and figured out all this deliberate letter writing to figure out, should I be drafted or should I enlist? And then finding the photo that's never been seen before just by digging through the archives. That was really okay. Pretty much the whole film. I mean, that, are there baby. Yeah, it's are there 100 things I would change? There are 100 things I would change, but I really do like this film. And now that I have, you know, I don't see it three times a day now. I just, the last time I watched it, I went in and watched maybe the last third of it when we premiered it back in my hometown in Carroll about 2 weeks ago. And I sat there and I got enthralled again. And I was like, gosh, dang it.
That's
good.
But that's what good movies do, though. Like, good movies, I think good movies are rewatchable. Like,
and I hope people watch this film over and over again, because there's enough in there. And I do need to take a moment and a shout out to Brendan Dunphy, my fellow producer, who's also the voice of Niall in the film.
I was wondering where you found those voices. I'm like, was that voices.com too?
But he also scored the film. And I think the score for this film is just really makes it pop and come to life. And yeah, Brendan, our voice actors, one of the things I hate about documentaries is terrible voice acting. And so I was very deliberate in casting who we could cast, and having Brendan be on the team. I was like, well, this is it. And we played around with, should we try and do an impression of him?
Yeah.
Should we do an impression of Niall? Because Brendan sounds nothing like him, nothing like him. And so we took a couple takes, and Brendan tried to stiffen up his jaw, you know, and he could do kind of like a inflection like Niall. And we're like, this is not going to work. We just need you to be authentic. Just read it authentically and that'll come through. And it, in some ways, even though Niall's voice and Brendan's voice are so different, they seem to go seamlessly together. And I don't even think you notice it all that much. You're like, oh, you just kind of believe it. And that's a credit to Brendan right there. And then the rest of our voice actors, Tim Flynn as Niall's father, we call him Mr. Kinnick in the film. Oh, my goodness. Such a, you know, I know Tim Flynn. You've never heard of him before. He's one of the great actors in Des Moines. And I just knew he's got to be it, because he has this humbleness to him. He has that sort of, I just think that's what Mr. Kinnick would have sounded like. Anyway, I digress, but all of our voice actors, Joe Smith and then Sean Wilson as well, all did a really good job, I thought, in the film.
Yeah, did you guys, so you obviously didn't sit down at once and record them all. Like there was probably different, you did it throughout the course of the however long.
Yes, it was. It was just a practical reason why I ended up as the narrator and Brendan ended up as Niall. Not only is Brendan an exceptional actor, one of the best actors I've ever known, it was also like, we're not exactly sure that this is going to work. And so we need to be able to bring ourselves in whenever we need to.
Yeah.
And I have a recording set up at my house. And so if we need to rewrite one word, I can re-record it immediately. And so there's that practical approach, because at first I was adamant, and I know the guys would probably make fun of me for this. I was adamant, and strongly adamant, boldly adamant, maybe rudely adamant, that none of us were to be in this film. Oh. None of us are to show our faces or hear our voices.
You all are older.
This can't happen. Because usually when I it just annoys me when I see that in a lot of documentaries.
No, but I can understand that too, because you don't want... I would say you... The Iowa Nice Guy stuff would like help with attention to that, but it feels like this Niall Kinnick documentary and Iowa Nice Guy are very separate.
They are
separate entities, and you don't want something that you put so much hard work into that's kind of muddying those waters.
Well, sure,
they both stand together alone by themselves fantastically.
And I just didn't want it to be about us. I wanted it to be about Nile. That was my approach. So we tried like reach out to people like Morgan Freeman. And I thought, you know, let's we're gonna get a big name.
Got to shoot your shot, man.
We have no money, but we'll try.
Exactly. And then the guys, in their infinite wisdom, because they're all three of them are smarter than me, came to me and said, Scott, I think this film is gonna work best if it's from the viewpoint of the filmmaker. We don't have to see our faces in it, but it'll allow us to write in more of a folksy style. Because all of the other, as we already talked a lot about Niall's writing style and so much of the other writing from that time, it's so elevated that we kind of need a narrator who is just very simply stating things and can also say things like, when we started the search for the real Nile Kinnick, we didn't know where we'd begin.
Yeah.
Little did we know it'd be in Phoenix, Arizona. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, now we've taken this thing that could feel a little stuffy and unapproachable, and we've stripped it away and said, hey, we're going to take you on this ride with us as we discover this story. And I was very reluctant. And then when I cut the first narration and we put it into the film, I was like, you sons of bitches.
Damn it, they're right.
Damn it. And so it worked out really well, and I feel very fortunate to be able to be the voice of all four of us.
It's like that moment in Cool Runnings, you'd be like, what does Yul Brynner say at the end? He's like, but this doesn't mean I like you.
Oh, yeah.
When they finish the race, he like hugs him.
It was very much like we were a part of the journey with you, as you said, and as you were uncovering all these facts and learning all this knowledge about Nile Kinnick, if you were to go back in time and relive part of his life or be there for something that he did, what part would that be?
Knowing Nile would have made me a better person, knowing him in person. I mean, not to be too cheesy, but just spending the last 10 years of my life getting to know him in the way I have, I feel very fortunate. And, you know, I find myself using some of his big words and I always think, oh, yeah, that's something Nile wrote down. Mm-hmm. For me, I could pick a lot of moments, but the one that stands out to me is I wish I could have been there to see what happened the day he died. Yeah. I don't understand it. It makes me really sad that he, in a life so well documented, we have no documentation as to what happened in his final moments. It doesn't make sense to me that what is a relatively easy landing on water landing on calm waters, that he wouldn't have been able to survive for 8 minutes by the time that it took the rescue boats 8 minutes to get there. Niall was a great athlete. He could swim. We had Joe Sassman when we were on the USS Lexington for 3 days filming. That's the aircraft carrier that Niall served on. We had a 101-year-old at the time, Joe Sassman. He was a pilot. He flew the Wildcat. He mostly flew the Hellcat, which was the plane that relieved the Wildcat that Niall flew from the service. The Wildcat had some issues, and the Hellcat was a great advancement. But Joe came in. He flew both, and I had him walk me through what it would be like to make a water landing in the Wildcat. He walked me through, and he even said, I saw guys make a water landing, get out of the cockpit, walk down the wing, throw their inflatable into the water, step in, not even get their boots wet. So what happened to Nile? Because his wingman says he saw him out of the plane. If that's true, what happened? Because because he should have been able to survive for 8 minutes. What makes more sense to me is he was in the cockpit. He when he landed, something went wrong. He hit his head and he was knocked out. That makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
But the wingman who was there said he saw him out of the plane. Yeah. So what happened? And also, you know, there's that quantum leap sort of part of me that wishes, like, if I could have somehow saved him, I really do genuinely think not only this state and this country would be a better place, but I do think the world would have been a better place. And I know that sounds cheesy and like I'm trying to sell you to watch a film, but I think when you see the film, you'll be like, oh my, wow. Like
the influence he would have had on other people would have been, you could not quantify that.
Yeah. At the least, you know, and this is to say, I know a million things would have happened. We don't know what the course of his life would have been if he survived the war. But the potential is there. I am 100% confident that his potential was governor or senator from the state of Iowa, and his ceiling was certainly president of the United States. Yeah. And if somehow in the 1960s and 70s, the darling of the Republican Party was now Kinnock instead of Richard Nixon, how different is this world? Honestly, yeah. How different is this world? You know, I think he probably would have handled Vietnam differently. I don't know, maybe. I do know 100% for sure we wouldn't have anything like the Watergate scandal. And so Niall Kinnock, losing him was a real loss to our state and to the country. And I wish there was a way we could have seen what he would have accomplished. Now, if he would have accomplished, we would have accomplished. I'm certain there would have been many feature-length documentaries on him at this point.
People with a lot more money. Yeah. I'm kidding. But after all the conversations you've had with people and the research you've done, back to your point of you wonder what happened that day, do you know if their families kind of thought of that too? Did they struggle with dealing with that as well?
Mr. Kinnock wrote back and forth with Lieutenant Bowie, who was Niall's commanding officer, who you hear his letter in the in the film, wrote back and forth a couple times, and there's just no answers. Yeah. I don't want to sit here and throw out conspiracy theories or anything like that, because I just don't know. There is a part of me that wants to not necessarily pull his plane up, but to go down on a diving mission and see if there's any clues we can find.
Because they didn't have his body either, right?
No,
they couldn't find his body.
No, the body and the plane were both gone by the time the rescue boats got there. So we know where the plane would be. It's in fairly shallow water off the coast of Venezuela. It brings up an ethical question about whether or not we should investigate or if we just let it be. There was a movement at one time to go and pull the plane up. Bob Feller was part of that. Something happened there. I'm not exactly sure. It seems like there's some scamming that went on financially because nothing ever actually happened. And Bob, from my understanding, was pretty frustrated by that. But I'd love to know if his seatbelt was still buckled. Yeah. There's just some things I'd like to know and see if we could figure out what did happen. Does it change anything? That's a question we could probably do a whole podcast on. But either way, the loss of Niall Kinnock is a genuine tragedy in my estimation.
What's the biggest thing he taught you over this past 9 years of research?
I would say that really you can be a great person without having great athleticism.
Yeah.
Like the things that he stands for, I think people think of him as a football player first. But being a great brother, a great son, a great student, a great teammate, a curious thinker, those things you can do whether or not you're athletic. And I think looking at Niall's story and getting to know him so intimately, I just echo Don's sentiment that Niall was a teacher, and we should follow what he stood for off of the field as much as on the field.
And I think that's even more applicable today, because I think we as a society do have a complex of putting athletes on that hero complex, on the pedestal. And if you look at what's going on with Brett Favre right now, you know, this guy who has had books written about him as a Hall of Fame quarterback, as a great person, and you find out maybe not a great guy. And the guy who even wrote his biography said, do not buy this book. It really does show that Niall Kinnock was a genuinely, from what we can research, a genuinely good person.
He was a special person.
Yeah, he was a special person. He was a special guy. Had so much influence. Also confirmed Disney adult as well.
A what?
A Disney adult.
What's that?
Huh? An adult who is infatuated with Disney stuff because in
how was that confirmed?
Because he liked Dumbo.
Because he loved Dumbo.
Who doesn't love Dumbo?
I'm not gonna lie, I'm
Dumbo.
Not a fan of Dumbo. No. It scares me.
But imagine the first time you see that. Like he was. Yeah. I mean, nobody'd really seen cartoons like that. Niall was just like, wow. He's like, the things they could do with these cartoons today.
But that shows also like his artistic side too, that he had such an appreciation for that.
Yeah, he was, he had a sense of humor, which I think you see in the film. Yeah. He had that shyness, but he was also this quiet confidence. You know, when he walked into a room, I think you'd know, oh, that guy, yeah, I can follow that guy. And we can still do that, even though he's passed on. I think the things he stands for, we can still strive for. So I feel just really fortunate to have gotten to spend my life working on this project.
So next for you is the Jack Trice documentary.
Yes, we have Jack Trice that we had gotten started, and we ended up splitting them, Jack and Al's story. That will really come down to funding. Unfortunately, I have to accept that the model we used this time for Kinnick, which was, we're just going to raise enough to cover our expenses and not pay ourselves until the end, is not feasible. A lot of life has happened with the film group. Like some people have families now. So the Jack Trice film getting completed will be predicated on getting the funding. And that is going to be the case for any film project that I work on moving forward. It's time. We have a proof of concept. If people watch Kinnick film and they still don't believe we can do a 90-minute film, I can't. There's nothing I can say to them.
So you will be on Voices.com.
Yes. If anybody's looking for a voiceover, let me know.
I love
it. There you go, man.
Well, thank you for sharing his story and dedicating the last 9 years.
For the people, what's next for you to pimp out? Where can people see it?
Oh, yeah. So right now we're in about, this is going to change. I don't know when this all comes out, but we're currently in Fridley Theaters. So we're roughly in about over 20 theaters at this moment. More adding in the coming weekends. We may be expanding through the Midwest. If you follow me on social media at Scott Sipker on Twitter or Instagram, or I guess on Facebook, you'll be able to find that information. You can stream it now on Vimeo. As an independent filmmaker, that is the most lucrative thing. So if you're into streaming, go for that. We will be selling DVDs and Blu-rays once we're done with this theatrical run. So if you're up for a great gift, I think, for that Hawkeye or historical fan in your life, it might just be coming around the holidays here soon. Gosh, it is almost October coming up, isn't it? So you can do that.
It's 90 degrees outside.
Yes, and just follow me on social media because we will probably be adding some streaming options. We're getting close to inking some deals on some other streaming options that, shall we say, are a little bit more ubiquitous. So we're working on that to try. We want everybody to see the film. We do need to make money on the film, just to be straight up, if we want to make more films. So even if you're a Cyclone fan, watch the film if you can, if you want us to get that Jack Trice film done. And just remember that Niall's father was quarterback at Iowa State, and so we have that connection.
Yeah, that was something that Sam and I talked about at the end. I'm like, wow, every Hawkeye fan needs to see this. He's like, no, every Iowan needs to see. I'm like, no, every football person needs to see this. It was just such an incredible story. Thank you for telling it, and again, the last 9 years dedicated to it. It was amazing.
Well, thanks for having me on these wonderful microphones. I'm not sure what the first part of this podcast is going to sound like.
Don't worry
about Sam it. To find
yeah,
out.
Sam will figure it out.
I get to cut that together.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Exactly like an RVTV skit. I don't know how this started with Scott.
But it's going to start.
We'll figure it out.
Just like walking a mile to go shoot a
Oh, yeah, that's one
shot
story.
Of a bridge.
the Kate Shelley story. We've written a screenplay, a dramatized version of that Kate Shelley story. So hopefully we'll make that into an actual action movie at some point because that's a great story. That I think would be a solid 90 minutes. But again, we'll see how the funding goes.
Yeah. So check them out on Vimeo, people. Buy it.
Later.
Bye.